What happens if the U.S. defaults on its debt just for a few days?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Jeremy Hobson with The Morning Open. A look at business and the economy as Wall Street starts the day. Coming up, more and more Republicans are saying maybe a short-lived federal default wouldn't be so bad. We'll hear from an economist about that. But first, where's Wall Street? Stocks are mixed right now. The Dow is up 5 points at 12,076. The NASDAQ down about 0.4% right now. The S&P 500 down 0.1%. We just heard from the cartel of oil-producing nations known as OPEC. Says it will keep production levels steady for now. Member nations are meeting in Vienna, and they say they'll meet again in a few months to consider pumping more oil. Well, the Treasury Department says Congress has until August 2nd to raise the federal debt limit, or the U.S. will have to stop paying its creditors. There have been dire warnings about what that would mean if the government defaults on its debt. But now it seems more and more Republicans are saying publicly that a short-lived default wouldn't be so bad. Marketplace's Amy Scott reports.
Republicans say failing to raise the U.S.'s $14.3 trillion borrowing limit wouldn't be catastrophic. Some, like former Minnesota Governor Tim Pawlenty, who's running for president, say we can put paying creditors ahead of domestic spending. Other Republicans, including Paul Ryan, head of the House Budget Committee, say a short-term default wouldn't lead to calamity.
If a bondholder misses a payment for a day or two or three or four, what more is more important that you're putting the government in a materially better position to be able to pay their bonds later on.
Jack Albertine of forecasting firm Albertine Enterprises says the idea does seem to be catching on.
I think it's more out of frustration and out of almost desperation to find an endgame that this kind of idea will be gaining traction.
That's not to say Republicans are dismissing a compromise entirely. House leadership is taking part in bipartisan debt ceiling talks with Vice President Joe Biden. Tomorrow, the two sides meet again. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Well, let's get some analysis now from Richard DeKayser. He's an economist with the Parthenon Group, and he's with us live from Boston, as he is every Wednesday. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what do you think, Richard? Would a short-lived default be so bad for the U.S. economy?
It's very hard to say how foreign investors in particular are going to respond to a short-term default, but I think it's possible that it would not be as apocalyptic as people had feared. But I think that misses the larger point. It's not what happens on August 3rd. It's what happens for the decades to follow. If the U.S. defaults on its debt, it could suffer a permanent, and when I say permanent, I mean 10 years or more, impairment of its creditworthiness, and the long-term consequences there would unambiguously be bad.
Why would it suffer for 10 years or more because of just a few days of a default?
Well, one of the reasons that investors flock to U.S. Securities is because they believe them to be free of these kinds of risks. Payment is made always on time and without question. If that fundamental premise is challenged, you could see investors confronting greater risk. They would charge for that risk. We'd have to pay them more in interest rates. And even if it was small, just say a tenth of a percentage point, over decades that would amount to hundreds of billions of dollars. And the irony is it would impair our budget situation rather than improve it.
Richard DeKayser, economist with the Parthenon Group. Thanks as always.
My pleasure.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Novo Nordisk. Since 1923, committed to diabetes care and areas of unmet medical needs at novonordisk-us.com. And by LendingTree, providing up to 4 loan offers from a network of lenders. Learn more at LendingTree.com or 1-800-555-8733. Marketplace Entrepreneurship Reporting is supported by Farmers Insurance, trained local agents committed to small business success. More at 1-866-200-4BIZ.
Nintendo has unveiled its latest gaming system, the Wii U. It won't be available for another year or so, but analysts aren't sure it's going to be enough to win back gamers from rivals such as Sony and Microsoft. The unveiling happened at the Electronic Entertainment Expo, also known as E3, here in Los Angeles. Our tech reporter Steve Henn has been hanging out there, and he joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, first set the scene for us, Steve. What's it like at E3?
It's kind of a madhouse. Fake zombies are climbing the walls. There were real tanks parked in the driveway. I can't play the serious games to save my life, so I've just been creeping up behind gamers like Andrea Leong to watch. Leong's a graphic artist who works in the industry.
So I noticed you were just eaten by a lion.
Yes, I was eaten by a lion. But overall, this game is really, it's actually really fun, and the graphics are really amazing.
What's it called?
Dragon's Dogma.
So, as someone who works in the industry, is working on a game like this the ultimate?
I would say so. It's one of the, you know, the dreams of anyone who goes into the game industry business is to work on a huge project that's almost epic, like a movie.
Well, how does the size of the video game industry compare to Hollywood?
Well, in 2010, video games for consoles like the Xbox or Nintendo sold more than $10 billion of games. So that's actually almost exactly the same amount of money as Hollywood. But if you add in apps for smartphones and social games for Facebook, that's probably another $5 billion in sales. So by some measures, this is bigger than the movie business.
And when I think of people playing video games, I do think of people that are younger that can figure out these crazy 3D games. Is that right, or is everyone playing them?
A lot of people who grew up playing video games are not so young. The average age of a gamer, according to the industry, is 37. And a lot of the games aren't just about lopping people's heads off. I met a game designer at USC last night that's building a game for Xbox Kinect called Mother Nature, and it lets you control the environment with your gestures.
Wow. Marketplace's Steve Henn here in Los Angeles. Thanks so much.
Sure thing.
And finally, to another new piece of technology being unveiled at a park in Hastings, Minnesota. It's called Sonic Screen, and its purpose is to get teenagers to stop hanging out at the park and vandalizing the playground. How will it do that exactly? By emitting a high-frequency sound that apparently can only be heard by people under the age of 20. In fact, we're playing the sound right now. Or are we? In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. And this is APM, American Public Media.
Chinese students spend years studying for intense college entrance exams, but once they get to campus, many of those students lose steam.
Chinese schools are producing this talent. In fact, maybe they're taking some very creative people and making them uncreative. And so this has tremendous economic implications.
I'm Tess Vigeland. What college burnouts mean for the Chinese economy? Next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.